Hello, everybody. Thanks for the introduction, Tim. And it is my honor to MC these final 2 weeks of Dave's time with us as he invites us to explore together what can happen when love meets fear. Because of prior commitments, I did not actually sit down with you all the last two Thursdays. Nevertheless, I sat in on both sessions, viewed them completely because Tim recorded them and our webmaster Dennis posted them shortly after the presentation on our wordandlife.us website. So though I wasn't there on Thursday, that's how I know that last week chapters 2 and 3 were the basis of Dave's focus on the way that trauma and fear imprint the cellular memories of our bodies. Trauma and fear can remain active within us, we learned, for the rest of our lives, and can even be passed on to another generation. The candid sharing and questioning in the group led to insight after insight within the atmosphere of Dave's guiding presence. This week, we work with chapters 4 and 5, When Love Meets Fear, the title of the book, and Facing Fear. We are reading from one of the preface pages of the book, Dave's Prayer of Affirmation, to start each of these sessions. So I would like to read it aloud for all of us. I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to show love and let go of fear. I am thankful for the enduring capacity to love that has come to me from the sacred heart of the universe. May everything that happens to me today open my heart more and more. May all that I think, say, feel, do, and am express loving kindness towards myself, those close to me, and all beings. May fearless love be my life purpose, my bliss, my destiny, and the richest grace I can receive or give. And may I always be especially compassionate toward people who are lost in fear or afraid to love. And now, if you'd like to switch to your gallery screen, we will offer our group welcome to Dave to bless the teaching that he brings to us this morning.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Over to you, Dave.
Thank you, Pat. And I'd also like to say thanks to Tim and Judy and Dennis, who do so much for our program. Our topic today is the title of the book, When Love Meets Fear, and I'm going to begin with sharing the screen. So let me know if you can see this. Seem like it works okay. Good. I wanted to begin with just sharing some resources. If you go to my website, on that very first page is my YouTube, How to Be an Adult in Love. It's about 10 minutes long, so I do recommend watching that if you haven't seen it already. And I also gave a 12-week class called Freedom from Fear here in Santa Barbara. That's on the website also as MP3 downloads. So if you want more on this topic, using this same book, I would recommend that. And the first one is free, the other one has a fee. So let's go on to our topic, which is the fear of love. And I know this sounds strange because we're all looking for love, so it's hard to believe that we could fear it. But we're going to look at some important ways to understand this whole idea of how we can fear love. And I'd like to begin with this wonderful quotation from Saint Teresa of Avila. She's a Catholic mystic, and Joanne Dignio, would you read this quotation? It's from The Interior Castle.
Lord, consider, we do not know ourselves, that we know not what we want, that we go infinitely far astray from that which we most deeply desire. Since we are made in God's image, it is understandable that we can't know ourselves fully. Saint Teresa, The Interior Castle.
Thank you, Joanne. This mystery of ourselves, we think we want love, and at the same time, we don't really know if we really want it. And today we're going to look at what is included in really wanting love in your life. And I think this is going to help us understand what's going on with us. But that quote from Saint Teresa, it just shows that sometimes what we think we want is not quite what we really want. So, Stephanie Glapp, would you read this part, please? Starting with most of us. And I'm going to stop along the way and comment.
Most of us have been afraid of love to some degree and may have never realized it fully. Here is how we may know we fear loving or being loved. We run from commitment. We hold grudges instead of working things out with someone.
Okay, so thank you. So if you notice that you hold a grudge, or even that you want to get back at someone that you believe that you love, you would want to ask yourself, do I really love this person? Because a grudge puts an interference between the two of us. And so as long as I'm holding on to a grudge, I'm not letting love flow between me and someone else. This connection between a grudge and the fear of love is something we may never have thought of. Okay, Stephanie?
We refuse to admit that we long to be loved. Instead, we think we can go it alone. We refuse to receive someone's love when we are not in control of how it comes our way.
So that's reminding me of that line from the song by Cole Porter, In the Still of the Night, in which he says, do you love me as I love you? Are you my life to me, my dream come true? Or will this dream of mine fade out of sight? So what he's asking is, I want you to love me the same way I love you, disregarding that everybody loves in a different way. If you really are open to the love of someone else, you receive it in the style that they present it in. Unless it feels abusive, then you speak up, because that's not love at all. But if you're loved by an introvert when you're an extrovert, or vice versa, it might not quite feel like love to you. But part of being really open to love is letting others come through with all their limitations and all their way of showing this signature kind of love. So two kinds of love, the universally understood love, which is a caring, committed connection. And then in addition, there's the signature version. Each person shows it in a different way. And you certainly notice that with your parents. One loved you one way, the other one loved you another way. Okay?
We demand total love and dedication rather than accepting others' limitations and signature ways of showing it. I fear losing something of myself if I am loved by you. We fear abandonment by someone, so we cling to him or her or them.
So as long as I'm still afraid of life on my own, I don't really have trust in myself. And trust in yourself is the basis of loving yourself. So as long as my happiness depends entirely on whether somebody else stays with me in the way that I want them to stay with me, we've got two problems. One is I don't really love and trust myself, and I can't really trust the other person. So this fear of abandonment is more than just a fear of abandonment. It's also a fear that affects both of us and is most likely inherited from something that happened in childhood. Okay?
We fear being engulfed, smothered, so we keep distancing ourselves. We can't show our vulnerability. Recall what Adam said to God in the Garden of Eden. God, where are you? Adam, I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself.
Thank you, Seth. So look at these three parts of the sentence. This is Adam speaking after he had eaten the apple. First, he says, I was afraid. I didn't want to reveal where I was in my life because of fear. Why was I afraid, really? I was afraid because to you, God, I would be completely naked. You would see me just as I am. Naked being a metaphor for full disclosure of who you are. And therefore, I hid myself. These three statements summarize a big part of the fear of love. You're afraid to show yourself as you really are. So you hide yourself. One of the ways we hide ourselves is by blaming the other person for what's going on with us. Another way we hide ourselves is by keeping secrets that are contrary to the agreements that we have in the relationship. So now, looking at this list, we get a better sense that we might indeed be afraid of what love is really about, what it entails, what it requires. And so we can no longer so easily say, of course I'm not afraid of love, I'm looking for it. Any questions about this part? Or anything on the list? And All these notes are quotes from the book, by the way. Okay, well, let's go on. Now notice this final quote that I wanted to add. I really like this quote. It's a book I read by Maggie Scarf. She teaches psychology at Yale, and her book is called Intimate Partners. Okay, Gabriela, can you read this for us?
Yes. He runs, but never so fast as to get away. She chases, but never so fast as to catch him.
Everybody get the game going on? So one person tries to run away from the commitment, but makes sure that he never gets fully away because he still wants what the relationship offers. The other person chases the one who's running away, but she makes sure that she never runs fast enough actually to catch him. So this is the game dimension of the fear of love. These two people are doing something a little bit different from what's on our list. They have an actual game going between them. And maybe some of us have played one of these parts in this particular game, so you kind of understand what it's about. And if you have questions, just raise your hand along the way.
David, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Jody.
Hi, good to see you.
You
kind of just mentioned something, but it seems really important. So, because I know that I'm learning that I was in that dynamic of the one person leaving, the other chasing, and I've done a lot of work, you know, figuring this out, kind of figuring things out, but a little bit about attachment theories, not that you have to go into it, but my understanding is that, you know, one person kind of creates an avoidant attachment and the other one creates kind of an anxious, which is me, but and then that the anxious person kind of chases after your avoidant, the avoidant sort of goes away. But I'm kind of curious how you see it in this context of love, because I was kind of tracking what you were saying and it seemed important. I don't know if it's as easy as just a attachment styles, but is there something more you can say about that? I've spent a lot of time in that dynamic that's very painful.
Yes, you're making a good distinction between the anxious way of being attached to someone, or let's say being connected, and the ambivalent way. And we are often caught up in either one of those. So the ambivalent person gives the impression that he or she really wants the connection, but is actually not quite sure about it. And then the other person is anxious about having it at all. All right. Mark Corona, would you read this paragraph?
We might build a wall around us so that people will not get too close or love us too much. We watch them walking around and trying to get in. The wall that we build has the given purpose of protecting us, but that does not usually happen. Instead, the wall maintains the fear in us. It guarantees that we go on fearing because we stay inside, huddled up, safe, but never getting the chance to confront and transcend our fear. The wall we built to keep love out also keeps fear in.
Thank you, Mark. And this wall would be, our way of protecting ourselves so that we don't have to be vulnerable, so that we don't have to show who we are, so that we don't have to make commitment, all the things we've been talking about. And we notice that other people are trying to come into our life in a loving way, and we just make the wall stronger. And of course, this reminds me, Chris Bache, would you read this poem? They're actually the lyrics of a song by Pink Floyd, and they summarize what we just were talking about. Hi, Chris.
Hello. All alone or in twos, The ones who really love you walk up and down outside the wall, some hand in hand, and some gather together in bands. The bleeding hearts of the artists take their stand, and when they have given you their all, some stagger and fall. After all, it's not easy banging your heart against stone, some mad bugger's wall.
Thank you. So that's what it feels like. And by the way, when I, this song, which I heard on my son's boombox way back many years ago while I was living in Florence, I heard this song and decided to write this book. So this book is based on this song. This is where I first got the idea about the fear of love, which of course I had never imagined in myself. But when I heard the song, I thought, oh, David, you're like this. And you really need to work on this. And eventually the work became the book. Okay, any questions? I want to remind everybody that good sex, or even great sex in a relationship, even if it goes on for years on end, makes no comment on the fear of closeness. You can have the best sex in the world and you're still totally afraid of actual closeness. I see some heads nodding. I think many of us can relate to it. So you don't want to go by that. Well, it couldn't be bad. None of this could be happening because look how great the sex is. That does not give you information because a whole different set of hormones are at work when it comes to the sexual part. All right, so now we want to just know something about actually working on these fears. Now we understand them. So let's take a look at what the work would be like. Seth, would you read this part, and I will stop after each bullet.
Practice working our relationship fears. Admit your fears to yourself and to your partner.
So you would start right there, and that in itself might be too scary to do. First of all, I'm too afraid even to admit to myself that I have this fear. And then secondly, I'm embarrassed to admit it to you. If I do admit it to you, I'm doing what Adam was afraid to do. I was naked, so I hid myself. Full disclosure of who I am is in the center of two other terrifying options. One is the fear, I was afraid, and the other is I hide myself. So doing this work may require work just on letting myself be seen. And what I would recommend, if you're a person who has such a fear, which most of us do, is to just start revealing little things about yourself. Tell little stories about things you did in childhood or adolescence, or things that happened in other relationships that don't put you in the best light. It's kind of a confession.
Yeah.
But this time you're not asking for absolution. You're simply acknowledging something about yourself and letting someone else in on it. When you do this, you're on the path for letting go of the fear. What fear is it? It's the fear of caring, committed connection, our working definition of love. Okay, Seth?
Allow yourself to feel your fears fully, cradling them acceptantly. We have to feel before we can deal.
So here you are letting yourself actually feel the fear. Let it pass through your body. You're not looking for a way out. This is the opposite of your intuitive sense. Intuitively, you think, oh, I have the fear, so I want to get rid of it. You don't do that. You just stay with it because we want that fear to go through us like lightning through a lightning rod so that it will go to ground. It's the earth, Mother Earth, who wants to receive our fears. And she will turn them into something that helps things grow. We want to think of it that way. So I'm going to let the fear pass through me, and I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it have its full career. I'm not going to try to get rid of it. Imagine being this kind of a person. But this kind of a person is you before all of these terrible things happened that scared you out of your wits. Okay, Seth?
Act as if or so that your fears do not become obstacles to closeness. If you fear engulfment, draw an inch closer than you can stand for 1 minute, more than you can stand. If you fear abandonment, let the other go an inch farther away than you can stand for 1 minute longer than you can stand. Repeat this over and over, adding more time and more space on each occasion.
Thank you, Seth. Yeah, this will only take 4 to 5 years. So don't give up. And what you're doing here is the behavioral approach. We're not going to spend time on trying to figure out what our mother did and what our father did. We're going to go straight ahead and act as if or so that our fears don't become obstacles. They don't stop us from opening to love or push us away from showing love. For instance, if I fear someone getting too close, then I let the other get closer than I can stand for one more minute than I can stand. And if I'm afraid that the other person might go too far away, become more individual, act in accord with his or her or their own needs and wishes, not be there for me every minute as I demand, I'm going to allow that for another minute than I can stand. And we just repeat this. Remember that these fears were drilled into us 1,000 times. So it's going to take 1,000 times of doing these 3 things for the fears to relent. But also remember, the fears want to go away. It's only we in our traumatized state that hold on to them. So this is my recommendation. It's the three words begin with A. So you're going to admit that you're afraid. Allow yourself to feel the fear instead of trying to get away from it. And act as if it couldn't stop you. Sue Freitag?
Oh, yes, right here. The daily extra moment and the daily extra inch impacts exponentially as time goes by because you are teaching your body one cell at a time that you don't have to be so afraid anymore.
Thank you. So that extra minute and the extra inch, it's like the little 2 over the right-hand side of a number, you know, an exponent. It multiplies by itself. It's bigger than you imagine. So you're really getting a lot of value when you do this practice. Okay, Steve Dennison.
Finally, it is easy to hug. It is hard to be hugged. In a real hug, you do not just hug. You stay long enough to feel hugged. When you hug, you're in control of what happens. The tightness, the time, and the position. But when you let yourself be hugged, you are letting the other person have some of the control and some of the power. Another road to fearlessness. Then you no longer have to pat the other person's back to signal you are ending the hug. Just like my brother, you can trust it will end before you die of fright.
It's not just your brother, it's me too.
Yeah.
All right, this whole idea of hugging, which we do a lot of here in California, and it's wonderful, but you know, it's good to ask yourself, do you allow the full hug for as long as the other person might want it? Of course, you don't want to give the wrong impression, I get that. But it's really an issue for some of us when it comes to this whole idea of opening to how other people show their affection. Any questions about this part or anything I've said so far? Okay. What we're basically saying in all this is that you might have a fear of love and not really know about it, but we've shown with the with our list here of what it would look like. Then we talked about the wall that we might build. Then we looked at how to work on it. And now we have one last thing. Heiko, would you read this?
COVID and sheltered place. Fear of closeness, fear of death was a traumatic event. Anxiety is a sequel to fear, and it hangs on after the trauma is over. So it is normal now to feel a low-level ongoing anxiety. It may take a few more months to go away. We need at least a couple of years to recover from the deathly fear we felt, especially when we denied having it.
Or even denied there was such a thing as COVID. I just wanted to make this one last connection so that any of you, including me, who notices that you have some anxiety in your body that you can't explain, everything's going rather well, but yet throughout the day I feel anxious at times, or even often, it might be a sequel to what happened in COVID. It wasn't just the fear of this particular disease, which at first was deadly. It was also that they wanted us to shelter in place, stay home, rather than be with people, be afraid of touching people or having people breathe on you, and being afraid of dying because of connection to others. You see the connection between this and fear of love? If love is about connection with other people, this whole thing with COVID, and there's the medical establishment's recommendations, turned out actually to be a traumatic event for the whole world. They gave us good advice. We did need to shelter in place. We did have to be afraid of closeness to people who might have the disease. We did have to worry because at first there were many deaths. So all that is, we understand. But it really was a trauma. The trauma was not just the plague itself. It was the way we had to take care of ourselves in it. So we don't want to underestimate the bigness of this event. And if you now feel anxiety still in your body, it's as if, even though the fear is no longer with us, although recently a friend said to me, remember, David, we older people are still at risk, so you still have to be very careful. And I'm thinking to myself, well, she means well. And yes, we do want to be careful, but we also don't want to make more of it than is really appropriate. But in any case, after a traumatic event, it's perfectly understandable that you would have anxiety. Do other people relate to this? Everybody get the idea? Okay. Anybody have any comment or question?
I was just thinking, those of us in Santa Barbara on January 9th of this year, at least, we felt the trauma of the January 9th debris flow and the aftermath 5 years ago. Yes. It's still living in my body.
Absolutely. Thank you, Anne. And that's perfectly normal. Don't think there's something wrong with you. It just goes with the territory. All right. Well, I'm going to end the screen sharing. And we're going to go into our groups. And when you go into your groups, and Yarko, I'll come to your question after. When you go into your groups, would you talk about how any of this idea of the fear of love is real to you? Don't talk about partners or other people and how scared they were. Please, you know, make it I statements about yourself. Where in you has there been a fear of love? That's the question. Where in me has there been a fear of love? Okay, Tim, did you want to take over?
Sure thing, Dave. Do you want to repeat that question just so I can throw it in the chat for everyone?
Where in me has there been a fear of love, or is still a fear of love?
Great. All right, friends, we're going to have about 20 minutes here to dialogue. We should come back around 11:08 for about 22 more minutes of conversation with Dave. So hope you all have a great time in your breakout rooms. Remember to just accept the little pop-up invitation. And here we go.
You know, where in me has there been a fear of love? And you know, just like, wow, it just seemed big. Like if I could really get that, I think it could shift. And one of the gals brought up, you know, defenses and barriers being gone. And it occurred to me, like I was thinking about that fear of not being known. This person was bringing up the fear of not being known. And I thought, all of a sudden I went to, no, that's not it for me. It's, wait a minute, what if it was the fear of being known and being seen? Like, I can say honestly that I've spent a large part of my life being squashed, you know, in relationship of who I am, of what I am, of maybe I went after them for that reason and childhood. But the reason I bring this up is I'm trying to figure out how that's related, because all of a sudden I thought, I love and all that, but maybe my own defenses or safety mechanisms or something around even that fear of being known has kept me from really bigger loving. So I'm kind of asking and I'm kind of commenting, like, am I onto something here? Because it really feels like I am, like I could see a shift.
It's a good question for anybody, but we do have to keep in mind that we can only reveal ourselves to those whom we can trust to hold the information supportively. It does not make sense to show your real self to someone who will use it against you, mm-hmm. won't be able to mirror it back in any other way than judging it.
Yep.
We don't want to reveal ourselves to people like that. That would be a kind of opening ourselves to abuse.
Which
so
I did.
You do want to keep in mind the trust element of this, both regarding strangers or people you know. And most of us have very careful limitations on what we reveal about ourselves to a particular person. So with this person, I can show all of me, and with this other person, I can only show half, and with this other person, I can only show a quarter. So we just go to movies together and discuss the movie and goodbye. So part of healthy adulthood is making those kind of distinctions. So it's not as if we're going to reveal ourselves completely to everyone. That would not be healthy. So I'm glad Jody brought this up, kind of reminds us.
So if you were, and I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. And then I know now I have to make different choices about who I, because, you know, I've had mostly unhealthy relationships and I don't want them anymore. So I understand that part. And if I was to open up more to where in me have I had a fear of love, it feels like something about not being known and not, I understand what you're saying, like, be careful. But then how, and my question too is, how do I open up to those own fears and work with them so that I am more open when I am in a, I guess, healthier evaluatory relationship? You know, I kind of have to see that.
Okay, yeah, regarding how to open, it's always going to be the same. It's going to be that I'm going to admit my fear, which you're certainly doing now, and I'm going to allow myself to feel it rather than immediately douse it with alcohol or drugs or television or whatever. And then I'm just going to go ahead and act as if the fear could not get in the way. So our only real fear about not revealing ourselves is when there isn't anyone we can reveal ourselves to.
Yeah.
But if you're revealing yourself pretty much, albeit in limited ways, to your various friends and family members, it's probably not such a big deal.
Okay.
Okay. Other
Thank
questions,
you.
Other ideas or comments? Something you want to share, Derek?
Hi, all. Yeah, I it occurred to me in this participation with all of us that a lot, in stemming from what you are brought forth, the gift of your being in this moment, Jody, yeah, that a lot of my fear of love has been just like you said, the fear of connection, the fear of being seen, the fear of being known. And in your comment, Dave, in terms of we need that person that we can trust to be able to open up. And now in hindsight, I realize that I didn't even have myself that I could trust to open up, to be able to let it into myself, to even be able to let it open, to be open to someone else. And a lot of that was being in that belief that something's so fundamentally wrong with me, and being on my own mistaken identity, not seeing the beauty, the lovability, the preciousness, the value of who we really are. And it's now in facing these fears in the way in which you're guiding us to letting the truth, the truth shall set us free, to reveal itself more and more on the cellular level.
Mm.
Yeah, I noticed that when I can be on my own studying in prayerful meditation, calm abiding, and doing all the practices,
and feel like I don't have a fear in the world. Like, ah, peace, the peace that passes all understanding. But then just even coming onto Zoom, it's like, ooh, I can feel my body like a little tremble. It's like, what's that about? And so it really emphasizes, it accentuates the way this is just in the body. And so thank you. Thank you for guiding us. And I continue to be inspired and eager to do the work as more is revealed and it becomes more and more beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you, Derek. And it sounds like you are doing the work. You reminded me of this poem by Emily Dickinson. I'll recite it and then I'll comment on it. One need not be a chamber to be haunted. One need not be a house. The brain has corridors surpassing material place. Far safer of a midnight meeting, external ghosts than the interior confronting a cooler host. Mm-hmm. Far safer through an abbey gallop, the stones a chase, than oneself encounter in a lonesome place. Mm-hmm. Ourself, behind ourself, concealed, should startle most. Assassin hid in our apartment be horror's least. The body borrows a revolver and bolts the door, or looking a superior specter or more.
Mm, powerful.
So you say, you know, it's not so scary that somebody else is trying to break in. The scariest thing is that you would break into who you really are. And ourself behind ourself concealed. It's such an important question for us to ask ourselves, like, how much of myself am I afraid to know?
And at the same time, how beautiful it is that when we get into the more of who we are beyond the ego, we get to just see the spectacular beauty, the gloriousness. Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Dave and Yarko, we had someone wondering in the chat about the resources, Yarko, the books that you mentioned. And then also if the definition of fear is sadness and anxiety, what the source info was there. If you could just repeat that.
So fear is usually about something specific. Like I have a fear of asking for a raise because they might fire me. Whereas anxiety is generalized and it doesn't have a specific object. You just feel anxious. I don't know about you, but what I do when I feel anxious, I start scanning and seeing if I can attach it to something. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe this will happen. And then, you know, I'll feel more comfortable because I've got it nailed to something specific, even though I'm not really that's not really something to fear. And then worry is fear of what might happen. And that is specific also. So all of us have all three of these. And of course, in cave people times, it was important to have these as a way of surviving. But we no longer have to hang out with fear, worry, and anxiety as much as we are. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to lessen how much fear, anxiety, and worry is in our life.
Thanks, Dave. And Yarko,
really,
could you mention?
We're looking for, remember the affirmations on the website, which I was hoping you'd listen to. The title is not freedom from fear, it's freedom from the grip of fear. We don't want to be fear-based. That we can do something about. What can you do? It's, we're going to admit it, allow it, and act as if it couldn't stop or drive us. Sue Freitag.
I was just going to mention also that those resources Yarko put in the chat.
Okay. Oh, Yarko put some resources in the chat if somebody's interested.
There you go.
Okay.
When you mentioned the affirmations, I wanted to ask about seeing the humor in the fear.
Yes.
Could you? I can't get there.
Yeah, look at me. Here I am fearing what probably will never happen.
Okay, thank you. And when people want to input their fears into me,
yes.
That sounds pretty... You need to be able to recognize that. And how would I do that?
Could you give an example of how it's happened for you? Maybe that.
That's, I don't understand it. That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah. Or are you thinking like we're sometimes carrying the fears that our parents had, like fears of scarcity?
Oh, okay. I can do that.
Yeah, you just want to ask yourself how much of this is from me and how much is it from my parents?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Or the church or the school or society or your peers.
Okay.
So we have the family, friends, family, peers, church, society, and something else. I guess those are the main ones.
Parents.
Now, the person asked about the resources, so I'll put those in the chat.
Okay, and I see Turiya has a hand up, too. Do you want to unmute?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to share this insight in case it might be meaningful to other people. I'm a student of Yakpan Sep, and his panic grief circuit is the anxiety circuit, is one of the anxiety circuits, and it's related to abandonment, that very thing that happens to every mammal. What the insight that I've gotten just now is, holy cow, do I go to panic and anxiety when I'm about to abandon myself, or I have already abandoned myself? I think so. So I just want to share that.
Okay. Yeah, it is a self-abandonment, isn't it? Ultimately. Someone asked about the book that I quoted from Maggie Scarf. The name of her book is Intimate Partners. In case you're interested, I do recommend that book. Okay, somebody else have a question?
Yeah, we may have time for one more, I think.
Okay. I try to put the resources into the chat, but I can't seem to do it. Tim?
Dave, I can send it on the updates if you give it to me.
Okay. I'll send it to Judith.
Send it to Judith. That's great. All right, okay. Sylvie, you want to...
So who had another question?
I see Sylvie's hand up over here.
Okay, Sylvie.
Hi. It's not a question. It's more a comment about an assignment you gave us in the first week, which was to record the list of affirmations and I fear. In our own voice, and I did it, and I still do it, and what I want, I didn't know I was going to cry, first of all. The other thing is that I am just really, it blows my mind of hearing it all the time. There's some affirmations that I recorded without even my knowledge, and I hear things very differently all the time. And things that were strong are not as strong. Things that were difficult have become normal in my voice, and I hear the other ones that I didn't hear before. And it's just... it is so strong, and I wanted to share it.
Oh, I'm so glad you are. And I can tell it's very touching for you.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is an example of where you're revealing something about yourself to us. And we're all appreciating it. So thank you. And I'm always so glad to hear when something I've passed on is making a difference. I pray to the Holy Spirit every day that whatever graces are in me can come through me to others. So thank you all.
Thank you.
All right, Pat, would you like to bring us home? And then Judith also would like a minute at the end as well.
Well, thank you, Dave, for the self-discovery and the hope that we've all found together with your presence and your guidance this morning. It feels a significant experience for all of us. Well, next week, May 25th, will be our final session with Dave, and getting a last chance to hear his wisdom and the writing in his book. We will be reading Chapter 6, Becoming More Courageous, Chapter 7, The Spiritual Path to Fearlessness, and the epilogue, When Fight Meets Light. You won't want to miss it. So we look forward to your joining us, all of us together next week for another insightful morning. Thanks, Dave.
And thank you, Pat. And there's a couple of things I wanted to mention. Dave has a brand new book. It's called To Thine Own Self Be True, Shakespeare as a Therapist and a Spiritual Guide. It is available, and there is something on the updates where Dave is going to be talking about this book. And I think that presentation is in July, right, Dave? So yeah. That's on the updates. And the other thing is, Dave, maybe you want to tell people about your poetry class.
Oh, yeah. As part of Santa Barbara City College adult education, I have a class on poetry. We meet Wednesday mornings from 10 to 12. And I'll send Judith the information about it in case you'd like to join. It's free. We read published poems and discuss them. And all the poems are about our psychological and spiritual issues. So if you'd like to join, we'd love to have you. We start again. The class starts in June.
Looks like Adam has a question.
Yeah.
We can finally hear you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but everything was able to have a microphone ready in my computer, but I...
Oh, okay.
Computer. I'm sorry for the confusion of being into computers at the same time. So for those that we are remote, is there a way we can access that class online?
Yes, it's on wordandlife.us, and I send out the information every week to tell you when it is uploaded. So right now we have two classes on wordandlife.us. Go in there and you can, for free, no code, just press the button and you can hear it, Adam.
Very good. Thank you. The other question is about the book, new book presentation. Is there any book presentation here in the San Francisco Bay Area?
About Shakespeare?
Yes.
Dave?
You can go to my website at daverico.com, and it's the first book in the book section. Just click on the cover. That takes you to where it is on Amazon.
Very good.
I took 25 topics that have to do with our psychological and spiritual issues, and I talk about them, and then I give quotes from Shakespeare that support each of the topics, like love, fear, grief, joy, so forth. It's a lot of fun, and I think you would enjoy it. And
I think Adam was asking you.
I take all the quotes and restate them in modern English.
I think Adam was asking if you have an in-person presentation of this book in the Bay Area.
Oh, no.
Okay. All right, there you go, Adam.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
Okay, David, are you doing an in-person in Santa Barbara? Is that what I understood? You're doing something here?
Yeah, I'm supposed to do one with Rowley, maybe at the Unity Church, but I'll let you guys know when I find out.
In July. Okay.
I think it's in July, great. Or it might be June.
Okay, anyway. That'd be great.
Okay, everybody, we ran over, but you can unmute, say thanks and goodbye, and we'll see you for the last section.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. A wonderful
See you all next week.
See you next week.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.